Thanks, Eder, and thanks to all of you for your hospitality. Thanks for the invitation. It's very nice to be here for my first visit. I'll be talking about this idea of induced electric symmetry breaking, which, let me just say at the outset, is just a sort of non-standard mechanism through which an elementary scalar can acquire a VEV. It's work that started initially with Alex Azatov and Marcus Luthi, then continued somewhat recently with Yuxin Tsai and Yue Zhao in a more sort of generalized form that I'll describe here. But this mechanism of induced electric symmetry breaking for me can be quite interesting, particularly in supersymmetric theories, in order to potentially endow them with a higher degree of naturalness. So as a subtitle, I want to offer this. Elementary scalars in slash and slash or the naturalness doctrine. So what I mean with these conjunctions here is, so this in would correspond to the sort of true believer point of view in naturalness, and would be the sort of agnostic, and or would be the atheist or the unnaturalness, the unnaturalness-ist. Anyhow, I'm going to try to tread somewhere between the in and territory, so somewhere between the domain of the true believer and the agnostic. And really, as I said, induced electric symmetry breaking is particularly useful, perhaps, in supersymmetric theories. And so what I'd like to do is sort of factorize the fact that we haven't observed light stops, for instance, from the question of, do we need such things in order to actually accommodate a somewhat heavy Higgs? So yes, indeed, we've observed something that certainly seems to be very, very Higgs-like. So just as a sort of cartoony representation of this, let me show this plot that I've made myself, just because in this way I can heap all the data on top of each other and see, in this very simple space of just rescaling the vector coupling of the Higgs and rescaling the fermion couplings of the Higgs, where do the data lie? And yeah, when you heap all this stuff on top of each other, so I've normalized these couplings such that the value of one just corresponds to the standard model values, you see that the standard model is this star. The best fit point is that little circle, sort of depressingly close to the star. And so certainly if you also try to include precision electroweak in some model independent-ish way, you see that these couplings are quite constrained to be at least within, let's say, 10% of their standard model values. But really, the more immediate implication for supersymmetry, I would say, is that this is a pretty heavy state for supersymmetry. And so this little recap here is, of course, well known, but let me just try to wade into my topic rather than jump in directly. So of course, the issue is just this well-known and much-studied problem that in supersymmetry, you have a relationship between the self-interaction of the Higgs and a gauge coupling. So you get this bound that the Higgs can't be heavier than the Z at tree level. And so even if you wanted to get a Higgs mass at MZ, you already have to assume that you're optimally aligned with D flat directions, et cetera. But so really what you see from this is that 125 GeV, while somewhat light, it really requires an order one breaking of supersymmetry. In other words, this Higgs really has to acquire a lot of its mass, a large fraction of its mass, from supersymmetry breaking somehow. So if you just look at how things work out numerically, you find that the Higgs mass turns out to be about root 2 times mz rather than 1 times mz. And so this really is an order 1 of this supersymmetric relationship you would expect in minimal supersymmetry. And the problem with this, of course, is that quite typically, this breaking that you need in order to obtain a large self-interaction typically then feeds back into the Higgs mass parameter and can jeopardize the stability of the weak scale, which is what you might have hoped supersymmetry would solve in the first place. Yes?
In the calculation of V squared,
yeah,
you get quadratic characteristics and or you,
yes,
do a subtraction of units. So here, what happens about that? You have V squared.
Well, this is all something, I mean, that's all something you're doing with the soft mass, which then, I mean, So yes, you have to do some cancellation to get the correct soft mass. Yes, there's certainly a But this relationship stands. Well, you do have that. I mean, if you have weak scale supersymmetry, then that's
what. Supersymmetry gets rid of it.
Yes, of course.
So that's what it is.
Yes. But yeah. But what I'm saying is that really you need some large source of Susie breaking in order to get a deviation in this supersymmetric relationship of the self interaction. And then that can spoil that cancellation to some degree.
When you do the supersymmetry, you get a logarithmic divergence times the difference of the
yes.
masses and the superpowers.
Yes.
If the superpowers keep going up, then
exactly. That's exactly my point here. That's exactly my point. Yes. So yeah, just to be explicit about this in the MSSM, of course, here the problem is especially acute if I do something like just neglect A terms and imagine that I'm really generating this self-interaction from loops of heavy stops, for instance. Or yes, indeed, I get a contribution to the Higgs quartic, which grows logarithmically with this mass. But then, of course, this feeds back into the Higgs mass parameter as a power. So in other words, the contribution to the Higgs soft mass here is exponentially sensitive to the amount of quartic you need to generate with these heavy states. Even in very simple non-decoupling schemes, like in the NMSSM, this is a problem that you can see almost trivially just at the level of statement of words, but you can also see it diagrammatically. So let's just look at a simplified case of the NMSSM where I couple H up, H down to some singlet and superpotential. And so just by integrating out the singlet's F term at tree level, you indeed generate some contribution to the quartic. There's this slightly unfortunate fact that it goes like sine squared 2 beta. So in other words, this is maximized along what would be a D flat direction in the MSSM. But there's also another potential problem, which is that this can also get diluted by the fact that, if the scalar component of this singlet is fairly light, in other words, if you don't have a large soft mass for this thing, then you can actually suppress this contribution to the quartic. And you can see it diagrammatically just by using this Susie mass term to insert a series of the scalar component of this singlet. So you see that you just resum a series like this and find that the quartic actually goes like this coupling squared times this quantity to the minus one. So if this soft mass is very small, then this term is very large, and you take the inverse of that and you find that this thing vanishes. So as I said, at the level of stating this in words, it's even simpler to say, which is just that if you integrate this thing out supersymmetrically, of course you don't generate you don't generate any contribution to the Higgs quartic. But okay, so to maximize the contribution you would get in the NMSSM, what you would want to do is give a nice big soft mass to this scalar. But again, that feeds back into the Higgs mass parameter itself. And you can see that just through this sort of loop diagram where you connect H up and H up through the H down F term and this and the singlet scalar. So now again, you find that the Higgs up soft mass squared is growing like the singlet soft mass squared. So in this case, it's not exponentially sensitive to the contribution to the quartic you're trying to generate, but it's not insensitive. So this again is just a statement that very typically the Susie breaking you need to maximize the quartic is going to feed back into the Higgs soft mass. So okay, let's just recap the problem. The problem again is just that if you have a Higgs which is obeying this sort of mass relationship, so if the Higgs mass squared is growing just linearly with its self-interaction, that state has to get a large fraction of its mass from Susie breaking, and this quite typically opens the door to issues of tuning. So the question that I want to try to answer, think about in this talk, is what sorts of theories might we write down that could invalidate this mass relationship? So in other words, again, just as I alluded to in the very beginning, is it really the case that we need this large Susie breaking just to accommodate the Higgs mass? And to talk about this, I'll follow a very simple outline, just in three parts. So in the first part, I'll talk about induced electrically symmetry breaking in the sort of first way we wrote it down, and the simplest incarnation we can think of, which actually requires some strongly interacting confined sector. In case you don't like strong dynamics, I'll then try to talk about how you can do this within a perturbative setup, and then I'll offer some general conclusions at the end. And already, so this is line number one, because actually there's a part zero, which part zero is just a very sort of simple question followed by some simple storytelling and a simple examination of a toy model. So the toy model and the question is this. We think we know better than ever what the Higgs potential looks like. So indeed, if I just have some negative mass squared and a positive quartic, this just gives, you know, this leads to the paradigm that you learned as a child, that this induces a non-zero VeV for the Higgs. And this gives you this mass relationship. The Higgs mass squared grows linearly with that self-interaction. So the question is that I want to ask is, what if you flip the sign of that mass term while keeping the rest of the standard model exactly as it is? So in other words, how much partial credit would we assign nature if she had made this little sign error? Your immediate answer would be, well, you could state it in whatever way you like, but would be that electroweak remains intact. So all the standard model gauge fields and fermions remain massless. Yeah, so this is the quick answer. You're jumping ahead to the not so quick answer, which I'll come to in a second. So you'd say qualitatively, this world looks nothing like ours. However, you would say, well, in this theory, the Higgs mass is roughly independent of the quartic. It just tracks the mass parameter itself. So that might be kind of nice, so we'll give that a thumbs up. But the rest of this stuff is sort of maximally unattractive, so we'll give that a big thumbs down. And even though the thumbs down box is bigger than the thumbs up box, I'm going to play the part of the optimist or the fool, however you want to think about it, and go with the thumbs up fellow here and think about this a little bit more. So as Itai immediately pointed out, the not so quick answer is to say, well, actually, I know that QCD breaks electroweak in just the right way. So this is the story that your Technicolor forefathers are very eager to point out, that you, through the development, the dynamical development of a non-zero condensate for this quark bilinear, you break this SU2 squared down to the vector subgroup, so you get three composite goldstones that can be eaten by the W and Z. And the unfortunate part of this is that the masses turn out to be wrong by orders of magnitude. So qualitatively, this looks nice, though. I mean, you even have this custodial protection. Quantitatively, however, it's dead wrong. And since this is a story I'll pursue in greater detail, let me just note some notation here, even though it's very standard. Just to be explicit, we can arrive at this same conclusion in terms of some effective theory just by packaging up all the pions within some exponentiated matrix, which transforms like a bifundamental of these two SU2s. And then indeed, when you write down the effective theory as a systematic power expansion and powers of derivatives, the first term, the kinetic term of this matrix sigma, spits out for you exactly these masses for the Ws and Z. So really the only reason I'm presenting it this way is that I just want to be clear that this sigma is going to make an appearance later. Okay, so that's what was known for decades. We now know something in addition to that, which is that if I take the QCD scale to be the scale, my sort of renormalization scale, then somewhere in the far UV now I know that there's actually a custodial singlet scalar and that it couples to fermions, couples to quarks, it couples to leptons. So if I use this notation where I'm treating the Higgs also as a bifundamental, then I can write down this effective theory. This is the far UV theory, where I just have some Yukawa coupling to leptons, some Yukawa coupling to quarks. And so In the IR, you'd expect, well, now there's some heavy mediator that can couple leptons to the electric symmetry breaking vacuum, and so those fermions should acquire mass. And again, indeed, we can see this. So let me just go down in steps. First of all, I'll write down an effective theory just below the Higgs mass. So I integrate that thing out, generating these four Fermi interactions proportional to the two Yukawas suppressed by the Higgs mass squared. Then flowing further below the QCD scale, this quark, the first term in the expansion of this vacuum would just be a sort of lambda QCD cubed over 16 pi squared. And so indeed, you see that you do get what looks like an electron mass in this effective theory. And we could even package things up in a more suggestive way, where I identify the mass of this state as its Yukawa coupling times some assembly of things, which is just some mass dimension one scale. And so again, qualitatively, we've reproduced something that's reminiscent of our world. Leptons acquire mass here. But if you put in the numbers for this V that I have in quotes, you find that quantitatively, this is even more dead wrong than what we had found in the case of gauge bosons. But OK, again, I'm going to press on and think this qualitatively reminiscent statement is enough to push me forward. And so that'll bring me to talk about this idea of induced electric symmetry breaking. So I had already alluded to the logic followed by Technicolor enthusiasts, which was to say that, well, QCD breaks the electroweak in the right way. If I imagine some other dynamics that confines at a TEV scale, I can actually generate masses for the Ws and Z of the right order. So let me follow something similar here. What I had written on the previous slide is that there was some scale, which I called V in quotes, some Yukawa coupling times this QCD scale cubed, suppressed by the Higgs mass squared. But this was far too small. If I, however, assume that there's some new confining dynamics, so replace lambda QCD by lambda TC, and suppose that lambda TC is of order a TeV, and that instead of some light quark Yukawa, I have some order one-ish Yukawa, then this V in quotes actually becomes something that I could reasonably think of as being identified with this with the Higgs VEV of 246 GeV. So just to sort of rewrite what we had looked at in the QCD case, the UV potential would again have a positive mass squared for the Higgs, has some Yukawa coupling to these technofermion psi and psi prime, which you can imagine is just transforming as a fundamental and anti-fundamental of some confining new SUN gauge group. And so the story is exactly the same, that below the confinement scale, of this new dynamics. Well, now the story is somewhat different because actually in the effective theory below that confinement scale, you still have a Higgs. So in the theory, I still have a Higgs, but instead of some fermion bilinear, I get the first term in that expansion is just the scale cubed over 16 pi squared. So this potential, you see, I've made no mention of the quartic for the Higgs, has a positive mass squared, but the effective theory in the IR has a linear term, has a tadpole term for the Higgs. And so this is enough to, as I've just argued, to generate a reasonably sized VEV for this state. And the upshot again here is that this is a novel way to break electroweak symmetry just because it really is the existence of this confining dynamics and the Higgs coupling to that dynamics, which induces a non-zero VEV for this field.
I'm not trying to understand this
part. Ah, yes.
So there is SU2 is broken partially from your confining.
Yes, yes.
Are you saying there's an additional contribution from inducing a negative mass term for Higgs?
No.
In other words, so what do you mean by the field H?
Why?
It has a
quadratic and a linear term. That displaces the minimum, right?
Oh, so you're saying, I see. So what contribution, how much is electrically broken by...
Yeah. I'll come to that. Yeah. Good.
Uh-huh.
kind of technical and you run into trouble with the data because of the flavor changing in different colors. Not BBC.
Yeah, so here, I mean, there's an important difference here, of course, which is that, I mean, in standard Technicolor, the problem is that you have to cook up some very elaborate way to generate or to communicate electroweak symmetry breaking to the standard model fermions. But here I'm inducing a VEV for an elementary Higgs, and this thing couples to standard model fermions. So they'll get their masses in the quote, usual way. So I don't need any additional structure in the Technicolors. I don't need any extended Technicolor or anything like that in order to communicate to generate flavor. Yes. Right. Okay. And yeah, if I have this confining dynamics at a TEV with a sort of order one-ish Yukawa, then I do generate a VEV of the right size. And again, the reason that I wanted to chase this thing down in the first place is that the Higgs mass in this setup is at leading order is independent of its quartic. So in other words, the physical mass is just a free parameter in this theory. And then phenomenologically, we see that certainly minimally you would expect a new ISO triplet of scalars below a TEV, having to do with the fact that, as Itai was pointing out, this, you know, you have some contribution to electroweak symmetry breaking from this confining dynamics. So the minimal setup has three extra scalar states.
Well, but it also has to tune your contribution so that the Higgs with two photons would have the right rate. Right? But that seems to be controlled by how much the break would have by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
You'll do that by choosing carefully lambda.
Yeah, so. So I think it's the next slide where I'll discuss the numbers that I have in mind. And then just as an aside, I'll mention that once you actually work out the real potential, you find that corrections, you do get subdominant contributions to the mass from the existence of the quartic, but they're less than 20% very typically. So this is Itai's point, that now you have two contributions to the W mass. You have one coming from the sort of decay constant of this strong dynamics, one coming from the VEV you're inducing in the elementary Higgs, which I'm going to have to denote with a subscript H here, since now the total electroweak symmetry breaking VEV is a sum of these two squares. So you can think of induced electroweak symmetry breaking in this very simple setup as shared electroweak symmetry breaking, because minimally there are two bidoublets that I'm working with. You should also be thinking about how you can write down the effective theory, because of course this Higgs couples to the strong sector, so you'll generate some effective theory where there are interactions between the elementary Higgs and the composite scalar states. And even though I won't talk about these interactions much, the reason I want to write down this effective Lagrangian is just because it actually points us towards what will be identified as the perturbative regime of this setup. So the points in parameter space where you actually have an expansion that's well under control. So if you just follow, just do a simple Spyrian analysis and, you know, use your usual NDA intuition, you see that the expansion will take this form. And again, what you see from this, what I want to draw your attention to from this sort of expansion is that each subsequent term is only smaller than its preceding term, if this parameter that I define as epsilon, which is the Yukawa coupling times this induced VEV over the confinement scale, this thing has to be much less than one. So this should be fairly transparent, I guess. I'm sorry?
Capital sigma.
So this capital sigma is just like, it's exactly like the thing I wrote down in the case of QCD. So it's just a parameterization of the pions coming from a global breaking of SO4 to SO3.
So do you have extra technical pions?
Yes. So these are this was the additional ISO triplet of scalars that I mentioned briefly on the previous slide.
What particles are the standard technical particles?
Yeah, there will also be vector resonances, but these things are goldstone, so just, you know, if I'm just working from the ground up, these would be the first things I'd expect to encounter. I'll come to that. I can tell you right now it's on the order of 500 GeV or so. Okay, so to finally give you an idea of the numbers I have in mind, I can recast this expression that I had written down for the induced VEV, this VH. Let me just take this as a ratio of the, with respect to the decay constant of the strong sector. And the expression just looks like, well, like that. And so if, for instance, I take F to be of order 100 GeV, note that since I'm summing these things in squares, the VEV for the elementary Higgs is still quite large, still 225 GeV. The other thing that allows me to get away with a perturbative description of this low energy physics is that I have this 4 pi sitting out here, right? And so this might look a little bit weird because you're introducing a coupling of an elementary state to this strong dynamics, and you're saying you want that to be a small perturbation on the strong dynamics. But then you say, well, the decay constant here is 100 GeV, but the induced VEV here is 225 GeV. That doesn't sound like a small perturbation, but really it is because you have this factor of 4 pi here, right? And so if you take this Yukawa coupling to be of order 0.3, then really this expansion parameter that I defined previously turns out to be really, really safe. So you have a nice, well-controlled expansion here, and you can trust what you're doing.
So if that can go all the way down and make it 100 GeV, it's going to be the controlled expansion. Is there something special about choosing the scale to be around?
Is there something special about it?
Or, I mean, why TeV? Could you make it lower?
I think that the interesting question would be, why should we be so lucky as to have confining dynamics right around the same scale as the Higgs? And I'll try to provide an answer to that.
No, I mean, like you could, I mean, the induced VEV that you get with the Higgs isn't just set by the scale of confinement.
Yes.
Which you're getting from the F.
Yes.
So if you could make F much more smaller.
Oh. I mean, at the expense of making this coupling much larger. So then I should worry about, well, what is this coupling doing as I run into the UV, for instance? So I think that, it's, I mean, also phenomenologically, I mean, if you say you want F to be very small, then you have to start explaining away the non-appearance of vector resonances, right? Because your vectors in this minimal setup will have electroweak charges. And if you make F tiny, then they should have appeared, you know, at low scales, and they haven't. So now we can come back to this plot that I started with and actually say something about constraints on this kind of setup. So again, recall that now there are these two contributions to the W mass. What that means is, you know, you can just apply your simple Higgs low energy theorems type thinking and realize that this tells you immediately that this Higgs has suppressed couplings to vectors. So I think this is why Itai was mentioning Higgs to gamma gamma. Because indeed, now you can look at LHC data and you say, well, these couplings are within, as I said earlier, about 10% of their standard model values. And so what can I conclude? Well, so let me, okay, so I've relabeled these axes. Apologies. A, this thing A on the horizontal axis is just the vector coupling normalized by its standard model value. And this, as I said, is within about 10%. So we can compare this to the model prediction, which is just that the ratio of the coupling in this model to that in the standard model is just given by this induced VEV over V, yes? And this is great, because this actually allows us to put an upper bound on F. So you can just cast it in this form where if you call the uncertainty on the measurement of this vector coupling sigma A, I think it just takes this form. And so to satisfy sigma A of order 10%, F can't be much larger than about 110 GeV, which is partially why I chose the numbers I did on the previous slide. So in the event that this uncertainty gets down to 5%, which is very optimistic if you're talking about LHC physics, you can still play this game and get away with F of order 75 GeV. But again, as I sort of suggested just a moment ago, once you start doing that, then you would have to think about, well, now I expect to find vectors at somewhat low scales. But I bring this up just because this is very, very different from how you would satisfy these increasingly standard model looking couplings in for instance, a composite Higgs model, or in a two Higgs doublet model in supersymmetry, whatever you want to think about. Because in those sorts of models, I mean, let me just take composite Higgs as an example. To get within 10% of the vector coupling for your composite Higgs, you'd actually require your new states to be above about 5 TeV. And as you decrease the uncertainty on that coupling, you have to push it up higher and higher. In this setup, it goes exactly the other way. And so this is good because you can't decouple this physics in a willy-nilly way. It's actually somehow, as you pin down the fact that this state is more and more standard model-like, you're really telling yourself that if you want to believe a framework like this, you really need to find new states at low scales. And if you don't, then I will frown for a day, I guess. Okay. So far, we've talked about just a single Higgs, and I've made tried to make a big deal about the fact that it's nice that you can get a Higgs whose mass is roughly independent of its self-interaction. However, we haven't yet explained why it is that Higgs mass, while positive, is still small, right? Small with respect now to some higher scale like the gut scale or Planck scale. In other words, I do have to supersymmetrize this thing. That's not particularly hard to do, of course. In fact, you can just write down some simple what you would sort of look at and think looks like the magnetic description of SUSY QCD. So in other words, you have some fundamentals of some confining gauge group, which I'll take to be SU2. You have a meson state, which I'll identify with the Higgs, and then this superpotential that you can write down. I stress that these are really my electric variables. So it looks like what you think of as magnetic SUSY QCD, but these are not like the low energy composite degrees of freedom. These are really my UV degrees of freedom. So if I extend this just a little bit, add to this model two sterile flavors, then the beta function coefficient is just equal to n, the number of colors in this confining group. And the nice thing about this is that I have a lot of theoretical control in this case because this theory just sits right at the middle of the conformal window where it's strongly coupled and it has no weakly coupled description. So it's a self-dual, strongly coupled theory. The reason I'd be interested in writing things in that way is that this would mitigate any coincidence problem that you might be worried about, i.e. this thing that I brought up with Gordon, of why should we be so lucky as to have some confining dynamics right around the same scale that the Higgs exists. But if you have this theory with a strongly coupled fixed point, you can imagine just sitting at that fixed point over some large range of energies, where then you hit this scale where SUSY breaking is communicated to this sector, which I'll take to be around a TeV. And then the scalar components of these technofermions acquire masses, right? So you integrate these things out. Now your effective beta function coefficient is greater than this critical value for which you would enter a confining phase. So because you started at a strongly coupled point, you don't have to go through much running for this theory to then confine. So this, in other words, there's a word missing here. The phase transition is induced by SUSY breaking. That's what that should say. And so this is what would mitigate this potential conspiracy, setting the confinement scale to be so close to the Higgs mass. But again, the upshot here is that just like in this toy QCD case that I looked at to begin with, the Higgs mass really is a free parameter in this setup. So let me discuss very briefly and in a sketchy way the minimal phenomenological implication of this model. And this is, so let me draw your attention to this bottom line so that this is work in progress. So that's why I'm being somewhat sketchy, but just to give you an idea, since you already asked about the sort of mass scale you might expect for these additional scalar states, let me describe this briefly. So this is work in progress, I'll mention, with Spencer Chang, Nathaniel Craig, and Marcus Luthi. But so in this minimal setup, I'm imagining that the strong sector is just breaking a global SO4 down to SO3. In other words, I'm expecting just three new scalar states. Of course, these things will just look somewhat like heavier copies of the extrascalar states you get in the two Higgs doublet model of the NSSM itself. The only difference, of course, is that they have no direct coupling to fermions. So the phenomenology of these things would be somewhat interesting because they couple to vectors. They certainly couple to weak gauge bosons, but they need not couple to fermions. So what about the mass of these things? Well, a way of thinking about that expansion parameter that I defined earlier is that there's some back reaction on the strong dynamics from the fact that this Higgs is acquiring a VeV. So recall that in the UV, I have some Yukawa coupling lambda of the Higgs to technofermions. Well, now this Higgs gets expanded around some VeV. And what I get out from that is what looks like a mass term for the technofermions. So I can, you know how to treat these in chiral perturbation theory. You just do the same sort of thing. And working it out, you actually find the totally analogous expression to what you would find for pion masses in QCD due to the existence of quark masses. So the Yukawa coupling of the up-type Higgs multiplying its induced VeV is what looks like a mass term. And so the mass squared for these pions just goes like these mass terms times the scale. And I can recast this in a somewhat handy way just by recalling my definition of this expansion parameter in the first place. So it's just the sum of these expansion parameters times lambda squared. So recall that I had said that these expansion parameters were on the order of 10% or less. And so if I put in those numbers and compare to a model with F of order 100 GeV, this comes out to be on the order, the masses of these states come out to be on the order of 500 GeV. Yeah, and again, this would offer some unique phenomenology just because comparing to the MSSM, for instance, where the extrascalar states have direct couplings to fermions, these guys do not. It's also unique with respect to the NMSSM, where the other scalar state you might expect observing identified with the singlet state that you introduced there. Well, this singlet, of course, inherits all of its quantum numbers from mixing. And so clearly this case is very different because these guys start out with electroweak charges.
Do you have a final where K is into essentially
a C and a Higgs? Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. And yeah, that's right. But
there's no second Higgs because you only have the three Boltzmanns. The three extra Boltzmanns, right?
Well, I mean, there is, I mean.
They're also from the SUSY. SUSY is also from the SUSY.
Yes.
So those guys could be happy, right? If you ignore the SUSY partner for now, then there are only the three extra Boltzmanns.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You might worry about precision tests. I'm running a little bit low on time, but let me go through this very quickly, and I can come back to it if you care to hear more or to have me explain it properly. Usually, like in composite Higgs setups, for instance, if you have some confining dynamics at a TV or a few TV, you would be very concerned about contributions to the S parameter, for instance. Typically, the way you deal with that in composite Higgs is, again, by cranking up the scale of the strong dynamics, so decoupling the vector resonances. In other words, there's some UV contribution to the S parameter, which you're trying to tune to be very small. Here, we're not doing that. We're going to take the full hit from the UV contribution. But now, we have a Higgs in the theory, so the only IR, the dominant running to this thing you generate from these UV states in the effective theory is coming from the existence of this new ISO triplet. So this running typically goes like if you have some doublet that's breaking electroweak singlet symmetry, it just goes like a log of the singlet mass over the triplet mass. So in this case, the singlet mass you would just identify with the scale of the strong dynamics. The triplet is just this ISO triplet here. But unlike in traditional Technicolor, where this ratio would be of order 16 pi squared, Here, because of these breaking effects coming from the Yukawa and the back reaction of the Higgs BEV on the strong dynamics, this thing turns out to be of order 4 pi. And with that, you can actually do okay with precision electroweak, because there's also a variable T parameter in this theory. After all, I have a Higgs up and a Higgs down. These things both have tadpoles, which is an obvious breaking of custodial symmetry. There's a custodial limit where the combination of this coupling and its BEV, where these things are equal. But once you start splitting that, you can freely generate a positive contribution to the T parameter. And so, for instance, this is a somewhat old plot, I apologize. But following this blue dotted line, for instance, if I start with no contribution to the T parameter, what I'm saying is I start with this full hit from the UV S parameter, which brings me about halfway out here, and then I get this little contribution from the additional running. But then I start cranking up this T parameter, and I follow this sort of trajectory, which can easily bring me safely back within the allowed region. So this is briefly our story about precision electroweak in the case of the strong dynamics model. So to recap the general scheme and to motivate a possible perturbative extension of this idea, let's just look again at these expressions for the various physical quantities that came out of this model. So again, there was an induced BEV for the Higgs, which went like a power of its Yukawa coupling to the strong sector, multiplying the strong scale over the Higgs mass squared, all scaled by a power of the decay constant. And I argue that this is sensible for a sort of order 1 Yukawa and for confining dynamics of the TEV. Now, let me just recklessly reimagine this thing as a linear sigma model. So imagine that I'm coupling the Higgs to a linear sigma model rather than a nonlinear one, where I'd identify that the scale of the strong dynamics is a mass of some sort of sigma mode, and the F now with the actual VEV of some elementary state in this linear sigma model. And it's interesting to do this because now this expansion parameter that I had written down before, I can recast in terms of the mass of this physical scalar, the CP even part of this sector, with respect to its VEV, the VEV of the Higgs and the Higgs mass. The reason I think this is interesting is that it points out that there's a sort of generalized criteria for induced electroweak symmetry breaking. And it's just that if electroweak symmetry is broken appreciably by some heavy fields, then you can think of, you can consider the possibility of getting away with a picture like this. So by appreciably, I just mean that F is in the same ballpark as the Higgs BEV. By heavy, I, of course, just mean that this sigma mode is quite a bit more massive than the Higgs itself. So just...
In that case, don't you have coupling, you can write marginal couplings between the thermal fermions and the new Higgs. You have different conditions for the mass of those fermions.
You could do that, yes. So in the...
Before you could argue that those are, you know, dimension 5 operators.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. In the model, I mean, so I don't want to do that. So in the model, I'll write down. Well, first of all, I mean, if you really wanted to do this in the supersymmetric framework, you do have to generate some self-interaction for this field. So what's an easy way to do that? Well, to just charge it under some gauge group, which is then giving it D terms. But if you do that, then you forbid coupling it to fermions. And that's exactly what I'll do. So yeah, the general point is just that if electroweak symmetry is already non-linearly realized at scales above the Higgs mass, then you could imagine that this picture makes sense and that you could even try to do it perturbatively. So to do it perturbatively, let me just go through a very simplified model of this just to demonstrate the salient physics, which is that I'm going to introduce something I'll call an auxiliary Higgs, which is defined only by the fact that its self-interaction is much larger than the self-interaction of the Higgs. Note also that it has a negative mass squared in the potential, and so it will acquire a VEV in the usual way. And if I consider this limit where there's small mixing between these states, then actually the effective theory that I would write down is an effective theory for the... So note this is an effective potential for little h, right? This is an effective theory for the electroweak singlet part of the Higgs doublet. Yes. And so again, you would find that this has what looks like a tadpole term inducing a VEV. And in this simplified model, it's nice to write it in this way because I only have four free parameters, but I need to fix the Higgs VEV and I need to fix the Higgs mass. So I can just look at some simple two-dimensional space and get a pretty good handle for what's going on in general. So I'll take as my two parameters just the self-interaction of this auxiliary Higgs, this lambda sigma, and its VEV. I apologize for the fact that you probably can't read these numbers, but this F scale is just ranging from 120 GeV to 240 GeV. Below this bold red line, well, first of all, just like any two Higgs doublet model, this thing, of course, has a decoupling limit where the couplings of the light Higgs are exactly standard model-like, and that's what's happening at this red line, this boundary here. And of course, as you deviate from that contour, the couplings of the light field to standard model fields changes. So this blue dashed line is, for instance, showing you where the top coupling would deviate by 10%, over here by 30%. These purple lines are showing where the coupling to vectors would be changed by 5%, 15%. So of course, as you get out here into this part of parameter space, you're going to run into constraints from measured values of the Higgs coupling. So that's what this gray region is indicating. But you have this sort of white Nike swoop as your available parameter space. And let me just indicate to you what sorts of tunings you would have to do in these various regions. So of course, as you approach the decoupling limit, you do get a contribution to the Higgs mass parameter coming from the fact that in this decoupling limit, you're cranking the mass of this sigma mode up to infinity. And so as you approach this line, as you get asymptotically close to this line, tuning is getting quite large. But even here, this first contour, which you can sort of faintly see, even as I deviate just a little bit from this decoupling line, I've reached the point where I'm down to just 10% tuning. Just to go in the maximally optimistic range here, so this farthest line out here corresponds to 65% tuning. So so in the bulk of our parameter space here, we're really this model need not be tuned at a level any worse than 10%. In fact, typically it's much better than that.
The sigma is below TeV. So if you look at the data for CMS
and
Atlas,
mm-hmm.
Takes it to 4 times.
Yes.
What do we see
on
TeV?
Are you asking if anyone can see the sigma directly? I think, yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, so. But I mean, the only heavy Higgs searches that I know of that would shed some light on this involve weak gauge bosons. I mean, Higgs to gamma gamma hasn't been extended to a TeV. That's right, yes. So this thing has to be produced by and decay to weak gauge bosons.
In the latest CMS data, as of the end of August.
Yes.
Blind. They treat the 135 as a background.
Yes.
They look for extra bumps. They find one at 137 GeV. It's now 3 sigma. It doesn't go away.
Okay.
So there may be something going on.
Yeah, that's potentially interesting.
They don't see it. They're doing a different kind of analysis.
Yeah, I agree that that's potentially interesting, and those are the sorts of things that will be very relevant for looking for additional electric scalars. Sorry. Yes, it is absolutely that thing. Yes. yeah. So I'll sort of wait and see before I actually make that declaration.
Too late. It's already on YouTube.
Oh. Well, good. I mean, now they know. Now they know what they're looking at. Evidently.
This is now a tape.
Yeah. Okay. So let me try to quickly go through. So what I showed you on the previous slide was obviously just a very schematic representation of this perturbative model. All I said is that this auxiliary Higgs has some huge self-interaction. But that's sort of, that can be problematic in SUSY theories, of course. Because typically, if you generate it with F terms, then you would imagine running into a Yukawa coupling or a Landau pole below the gut scale. Likewise, with gauge interactions, this can be problematic. So let me think at least briefly about what I can do realistically. And again, I'll pause just to tell you or to remind you, why is it that I would do this in the first place? If now I'm in a position where I'm telling you, okay, I'm going to introduce some new weakly coupled, somewhat weakly coupled Higgs fields, and I want to generate some huge quartic interaction for them through non-decoupling D terms or F terms, you should rightly stop me and say, why don't you just do that for the Higgs itself and avoid the introduction of all this stuff? One answer to that question is that there's a simple way in which I can just embed this auxiliary Higgs into a 5 of SU5. And what's nice about that is that then I can play all the D term and F term games I want and essentially ship offshore the whole issue of unification. Because any new dynamics I'm introducing for these fields, well, these fields are in 5s. So unification is very easily accommodated within this framework. So that's why I'm going to continue with thinking about actually generating these the quartics for the auxiliary fields rather than generating quartics for the Higgs. If I do that, if I say I want to embed these auxiliary fields into a 5 of SU5, and I imagine I'm generating their self-interaction with D terms, which I'll take to come from some SU2 gauge group, which has to be broken by a VEV of some additional scalar field. Well, now you see that as far as this new gauge group SU2 is concerned, I have 5 flavors here. I have an additional flavor from this singlet, which is breaking the group. And so this is a theory whose one loop beta function vanishes. So you might think, oh, well, that's great. I can maybe reasonably think that I could start at the weak scale with a large value of this gauge coupling and somewhat safely run into the UV. We're not that lucky. The two loop beta function ends up introducing some problem already at scales of order 10 to the 5 GeV. But again, this isn't hugely problematic from the point of view of model building, because now I can just embed this whole thing into some larger, let's say, SU3 gauge group, which is asymptotically free. And I can do all of this without, I mean, so what you're seeing down here is that all of this can be done in a way that still allows unification, at least of the standard model gauge couplings. So again, I can play with the dynamics of these 5 and 5 bars all I like without spoiling unification. There's also an interesting smoking gun left to be noted here, which is that still it's the case that the Higgs mass is not coming from a standard model-like value necessarily of its self-interaction. So there's still the possibility, not for the immediate term, but for potentially long-term physics, that we could actually see that there's a suppression of the self-interaction of the Higgs. So on this plot, what is hard to see is that, here I'm just blindly throwing darts at the parameter space and then projecting onto this plane. But these blue points that are circled are points where the self-interaction of the light Higgs are less than half of their standard model values. So you see that already, even with this somewhat moderate deviation from the perfect decoupling limit, the self-interaction is quite small. And so this is something that could show up. I mean, it's something for at least a couple hundred inverse femtobarn at LHC type data, but it's something that you could imagine looking for. Of course, I could also generate, I think it's maybe worth mentioning that I could also generate a self-interaction for these auxiliary Higgs fields by doing some sort of NMSSM type game. Here, this coupling can be somewhat larger than the analogous term in the NMSSM just because I don't have any contribution to its beta function from the top quark, which actually pushes the analogous coupling in the NMSSM into the unfortunate direction. But still, I can't make it quite large enough without the problem of running into Landau poles. So you can imagine just being totally agnostic and saying, OK, I'm going to throw in every sort of D and F term I could imagine for these auxiliary Higgses, and then ask, can I actually just with that minimal implementation, get up to the gut scale? And the answer is yes, but it's not a very interesting picture because, so you can't see these numbers, and I apologize for that, even I can't see them. But so it turns out that 10 to the 16 GeV is this first region here. So you'd have to be in this very special little triangle, very close to the decoupling limit, in order to actually get yourself all the way up to the gut scale without new physics intervening. Again, the point stands, however, that that this new physics can very simply and naturally preserve unification. So model building, even if you have to do some intermediate scale model building, it's really, as far as unification is concerned, it's not problematic. And with that, let me conclude. And I'll conclude with a simple picture, making a somewhat more a sort of motivation based more on the idea of covering all our bases at the LHC. So what we see is that if there's supersymmetry in the world, and so we imagine that there's some MSSM sector, and we know that there's some Susie breaking sector, also with the observation of 125 GeV Higgs, we know that there's some other sector, which I'll just call, for lack of a better word, the naturalness sector. And so, you know, previous models have put singlets into here, have put new gauge dynamics into here, all with the sole purpose of pumping in some Higgs quartic into the MSSM sector. But my point, the very, very general point, is just that, well, if instead of just putting singlets into that site, what if we put doublets? And well, if we put doublets, then we could imagine they contribute in some appreciable way to electroweak symmetry breaking. And if that's the case, then I get away from this this somewhat unfortunate scaling that the Higgs mass square just grows linearly with its self-interaction. So just to recap what I've already said, the long-term implication of this would be that you could measure a dramatically reduced quartic and cubic interaction. So I guess the cubic interaction that you'd actually be looking at. You also have new scalar states below a TeV. So in the strongly coupled theory, these were of order 500 GeV. Could also be that there's some weakly coupled implementation of this idea, so some perturbative auxiliary Higgs type model. And then you would, in addition to the MSSM heavy Higgs, you would expect a second copy of this CP even state with mass around 600 GeV. And as we've already said, this is something that can be looked for in heavy Higgs searches, so searches that are already going on. So these all have reduced fermionic couplings. So it's very different from standard, you know, heavy Higgs searches in the MSSM, very different from the CP odd states, very different from looking for instance, the singlet from the NMSSM. The broader implications are just that so far what we've seen at the LHC is just that there are new states, or there's a new state. So we see that scalars exist, and we see that this scalar exists in the electroweak sector. And what I've tried to say here is basically just that additional searches, as you look at higher mass searches in ways that are already underway, it could be that you see indications of some physics which would be indicative of a somewhat novel mechanism of naturalness. So my outlook here is just that it makes good sense to continue to look under the electroweak lamppost. Thank you.